This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello, and welcome to Black Mirror Cracked, the podcast for all your Black Mirror needs. My name's Sachandrika, and I'll be your host. Today, we've got a guest Skyping in all the way from LA. She's in the episode USS Callister, and she plays both the receptionist and a blue-skinned alien on board the ship. Her name's Milanka Brooks, and let's see what she has to say. The first glimpse of that spaceship, what did that feel like?
Toby's first request with his iPhone video out was that I say some lines like shields at 54%. So shields at 54% on set. Even though I wasn't fully in costume, he just needed that just to feel like the world had begun.
Well, when I first got the script, it was actually two scenes for my audition. And my audition was a self-tape, so I filmed it just in my apartment in London. And the two scenes didn't really give anything away. It was actually the first two scenes, so the very first scene set in the 1960s with all the funky outfits and hair and everything, and the second scene where we go into Callister Inc., and Daly sort of comes out more as his real life self from the lift, and that sort of interaction that I have with him there. So nothing was really given away at that point. So when the script then came through, I was sort of really obviously intrigued because, first of all, we had a lot of comedy in our script, certainly in the two scenes that I started with. So my sort of hopes were already that the episode was going to have elements of comedy in it. And then I sort of, once I got the script, read the first page and it says, Elena Talaska, the glamorous head of security of the USS Callister and also a bald blue alien. So this wasn't something that was actually mentioned in my audition script. So I had no idea that I was blue, an alien or bald. So as soon as I sort of read that, I thought, right, long days. I'm going to be first in, last out every day. Not that that's a bad thing, but I suddenly just went, wow, this character has just taken on a whole new form. But the script itself is just, it was wonderful because it came in at sort of 90 odd pages when I first, the sort of first edit, just before we went into filming. And, you know, like I said, with the little snippets of comedy sort of interlaced between what people expect from Black Mirror, which is, you know, the very dark sort of images and the quite sort of tyrannous characters that can flow throughout. I just thought the script was really exciting because the momentum just sort of kept building throughout. And it's also sort of interjecting between real life Callister Inc. and then back to sort of Space Fleet mod was just a really interesting dynamic throughout the script. So it sort of blew me away a little bit. And I'd already seen Shut Up and Dance, which William Bridges co-wrote with Charlie. I forget which season that was. I think it was season 3. So I already knew that the script was going to sort of come in at a pace and very strong, and it absolutely sort of lived up to that. I think even when you watch it, the first 5 minutes, which on paper was the first sort of 7 pages, I think, is so sort of powerful that, you know, you kind of know that you're set up for what's going to be quite an exciting story.
Yeah, I think it's really clever having the fourth season open with this very retro look. It looks unlike Black Mirror, and you don't know what to expect when you go into it. I spoke to someone else who's in season 4, that Gina Bramhill plays the voice of Coach in Hang the DJ, and I said, oh, you know, which other episode would you be in? Which other female role would you take on, maybe? Because there's some great lead roles. And she said, something from USS Callister, because you get two for the price of one. Did it feel like that for you in terms of playing the character?
Yeah, it was... I mean,
I think, I mean, the role that is, you know, the most wonderful role in the whole episode. Of course, Jesse's role as Captain Daly is quite magnificent, and the way in which he performs it is wonderful. But Kristen Milioti brings such depth to Nanette Cole that, you know, to be honest, once we were all on set, it was just, you know, we all became very close very quick. And as a crew, we sort of ended up doing a lot of things together, both on set and off. So when we sort of flipped from Callister back into Callister Inc., it was just nice because the story sort of, you know, the storytelling was already there because the writing is so strong. And as actors, we just had a chance to continue playing with each other on set in the way that we did. Callister, the USS Callister scenes took sort of the most part to film, so that was a good 3 weeks. And then we sort of flipped into the J.J. Abrams spaceship, which was quite incredible because I'm sure, you know, anyone having seen Callister will have seen that the production design is just, you know, out of this world on this episode. And so, you know, coming from the first day where we, you know, all had the honor of turning up to this wonderful spaceship that was built actually in London, sadly, you know, not in some exotic location or in space, for anyone who's wondering. You know, we then snapped straight into this, again, sort of very sort of sleek and, you know, sort of greyish set, to which is where we then end up when we sort of break through the wormhole. So everything was given to us in the sense of it was quite easy to adapt ourselves as our characters into the world that we were then in because of the extravagance by which they sort of created these sets. Also, Callister Inc. is another perfect example. You know, I'm on reception and sort of, you know, flipping away on my iPhone on this. Actually, what ended up being in the actual final cut was I'm looking at the Hang the DJ app. So I'm actually looking at the dating app whilst I'm at reception. But I think that was something that they decided later on. But in terms of characters, you know, again, we were just sort of given everything that we needed because of everything that went into it, which included the costume, you know, the production design, the makeup. It was all sort of done for us. But, you know, any chance to play two characters in something, yes, I'd take it every time.
With them, so was it like blue body paint, or what was that stuff that you had to put on? As
it was like a spray, like a body spray that went on. I was in the makeup chair at 5:30 every morning, and we'd start with the prosthetics, which were sort of all molded to my face after having done a big sort of head cast. And then we went into the spray painting, which was several different colours put together and all very sort of masterfully done by our head of makeup, Tanya Lodge. My hands were then spray painted blue, so it meant that I couldn't drink anything because in case it ran down my face, the blue would smudge. So I was drinking coffee through straws, and I'd eat nuts with a spoon. So it was quite a process, but the tights, my legs were tight. So, you know, I did sort of have some maneuverability, but for the most part, it was a little bit testing because everything sort of had to be done for me. And I had to make sure that the blue did not sort of get on anybody or get on the set or anything like that, which sometimes was quite challenging. And especially for the kiss with Jesse, that came at a time in the day when essentially there was nothing else left to film because we just didn't really know how much blue was going to end up on him and how long it would take to get it off and how long it would take to redo me and all this sort of stuff. So it was definitely a process, but I absolutely loved every moment of it. I mean, when the blue came off, I wasn't quite sure who I was anymore, to be honest. I didn't see daylight for those 3 weeks. In the evenings, I'd go for a steam room just to get the blue off. And I'd always shock any guests of this hotel that I was in who were in the steam room at the same time, because there'd be this sort of trickle of green that would come behind my ears and sort of run down me. So I think, you know, I think probably everybody else was happy that the blue stopped, but I was actually quite happy. I could have continued for a long, long time.
And also, once the blue's off, you can't demand people spoon you nuts anymore, so
I had to, you know, even on set when I try not to, but whenever I did sort of occasionally need to go, you know, to the ladies' room, I'd have to, you know, ask someone who'd then ask someone else. And then eventually there was just this sort of big trail of everybody, Malenka needs the toilet. Malenka needs the toilet. And so it was just this thing where I just felt like my privacy was just sort of gone for those 3 weeks. And, you know, people had to help me do absolutely everything. But in doing that, I got to be friends with so many great people who know absolutely every single part of me right now. So
the shooting schedule almost hinges a lot on you when you're in the scene, because is she blue or not? And because you play both. Well,
this is it. For the first 2 weeks, I was in every shot. Well, every scene anyway. Me, myself, Jimmy, and Paul and Ozzy, who play Nate Packer and Kabir Dudani. We, all four of us, were in every single scene. Michaela wasn't in for some days because, as the Arachnajax, it means that she has some time off. And Kristen, you know, her character doesn't get introduced for a little bit. And then at other times, she's on Scalane 4, or, you know, the planet with Daly. So, but the four of us were pretty much always, in fact, we were always on the ship. So it did mean, I mean, I was fine. I was sort of up at 4:15 every morning and just ready to go. But it did mean that, you know, in terms of the scheduling, it must have been really, really hard for Andy, our first, who's brilliant, because they had to sort of essentially try and do a couple of shots before I got on set, and then they could do the wide shot once I was on. But I didn't get onto set until 9 o'clock because, you know, to be fair, none of the makeup team nor myself wanted to get into makeup at 4:30 in the morning to finish by 8 for the shoot time, for the start of the day. So we started at 5:30 and we finished at 9. So there was this hour that people just sort of had to, you know, fill. So that, you know, everyone just did such a wonderful job, considering it was television. You know, I know that when you look at, you know, the Star Wars, the J.J. Abrams, you know, Star Treks and things like that, of course there are huge budgets and there's always going to be time constraints, but there's a little bit more, I think, freedom to do things on a film set, whereas in television you sort of have to keep moving because you don't have months to make it. You know, you have like 4 weeks to make it. So it just meant that everybody, from the crew down to the runners, across to, you know, especially first AD, director, Charlie and Annabelle, of course, and the actors, you know, everyone just had to be at the top of their game and switched on and ready to go at all times for that sort of concentrated period of time. And I feel like the effect of that somehow has meant that it does have quite a filmic sort of feel to it, which is really wonderful to see.
Even Charlie Brooker, when I interviewed him, he said he took his kids to the set and they're like, my God, Dad has got a spaceship.
He's so nice. He insisted on not being hugged. So I went out of my way every time he came on set to go and give him a big hug, despite my blue. I sort of always tried to keep him on his toes when he was on set. And actually that day when he brought his kids in, I felt terrible because a lot of the crew did often bring their kids in, and you know, they'd sort of come on set and they'd be like, wow, this is like this really amazing spaceship, and they'd start sort of playing with all the, like, you know, buttons that, even as Michaela says, her character, they don't actually do anything, but they're all sort of there looking great and there's lights and this and that, and then they sort of look at me and sort of run off in between their parents and just sort of not know what on earth was in front of them. So I tended not to speak to Charlie's kids or anyone else's kids too much, just for fear that that might actually put them off ever approaching anyone ever again in life. So after the read-through that we had, Charlie then sort of added new bits of text for us all, new bits of dialogue. And I think having sort of gone quite far in the direction of her dry witted humor in the read through, Charlie then sort of started integrating some new lines in there, which sort of added to that. So, you know, I'm not saying that by any means I'm responsible for any of my lines, but I think it's that collaboration between a character and the way in which someone plays the character working, and then also the writer, in this case Charlie, then sort of going, actually, that's good, I like that, this, then we can add this and this and this. So I found that there was more and more scope as we went on to sort of really play around with that. And actually, I think, you know, it fits that Elena, the receptionist, is also quite, dry-witted and sort of nonchalant and not really bothered. I think that feeds in certainly very well. And that's obviously all Charlie's writing with, you know, the dynamic that is that we all sort of either in the real world, we're not bothered by Daly, or, you know, on the ship where we detest him and, you know, we're sort of completely sort of disinterested in anything that he says. So, you know, I think in that respect, yeah, the dry-witted humour, it's all Charlie's ideas. It's just that I managed to incorporate that with my Eastern European wit.
He said that it sounds like Charlie came on the set quite a bit and tried to not get hugged. But what kind of input did he have?
He often came on set, but we wouldn't often see him. Annabelle was there. Our episode filmed second in order. So there was still 3, 4, 5, and 6 to do. So naturally, Charlie was incredibly busy for the majority of the time that we were filming in writing the next episodes. But Annabelle was there pretty much the whole time. So we'd see her quite a lot, but she'd often be sort of hidden behind some screen somewhere off, sort of in the main stage area, but behind our set. And, you know, so when Charlie did come in, it was, you know, it was just lovely to see. It's always nice to see them together. I think it doesn't really make sense to see Annabelle without Charlie or Charlie without Annabelle. So it was just always a real pleasure to have them both on set. And, you know, Charlie and Annabelle were very, very aware of everything that was happening in the developmental process, you know, all the pre-production, certainly during production, and they were incredibly involved in post-production as well, because I'm sure every episode for Charlie is his baby. But I think given that Callister, sort of with its comedic sort of undertones and also the fact that, you know, this dystopian future that we always talk about and we understand Black Mirror's to be, is slightly kind of challenged and sort of flips our understanding of what Black Mirror is because it's set in space. So I think all eyes were on Callister to make sure that the tone was right. But, you know, Charlie outside of work is just brilliant. They both are. We managed to all have a few dinners together because of the American cast being in London, which is, you know, it was quite a rare thing. And they were all so, so happy to be in London and especially to be a part of Black Mirror. I didn't even realize Black Mirror was like so big in America until they came over and they were just sort of losing it. They were like, oh my God, you guys, we're doing Black Mirror. I was like, okay, obviously that's a good thing in America. And so, you know, we all hung out quite a lot and I got to know Charlie quite well. We always talked about everything other than Black Mirror, our love of, you know, documentaries and, you know, silly anecdotes and stuff like that. So, you know, as you say, I think Charlie Brooker, when you meet him, is a very different person to this sort of powerhouse force that we know him to be.
What's Annabelle's involvement then? Like, what kind of does she add to the process and what are her strengths, I suppose?
Well, I think, you know, like I said, there would be no, I mean, in the world of Black Mirror, this is not beyond this, but there would be no sort of Charlie if there wasn't an Annabelle, and there would be no Annabelle if there wasn't Charlie. So although Charlie's name is sort of there in terms of the writing, it is such a collaborative process between the two of them to come up with, you know, because when you think about anything set in a dystopian future with the type of technology that's coming out every day and the type of stories and, you know, shocks that can bring to our modern culture, the stories are endless. So they really have to narrow it down and sort of put their heads down together and figure out what the best stories are for, say, that season to tell. So, you know, they really do work very, very closely together in all of that. And, you know, like I said, Annabelle's always on set whilst Charlie's off writing the next episode. And in post, they are very much a duo as well. They're a team. You know, pretty much everything has to go by both of them when it comes to the edit, you know, the grades, the sound. And of course, when you start at the beginning, you've got, you know, the director who comes in, you know, which producers they choose. Because for the most part, you know, with Black Mirror episodes being sort of standalone films in their own right, it's quite hard to have a sort of through line of crew that remain on all projects. So there tends to be new crews, you know, they'll decide on the heads of department for each episode. And so, you know, it's a huge beast when you think about it. So thank goodness there's two of them. And, you know, even when we had dinners together, we'd all have dinner with both of them. And, you know, Annabelle is just, she's so, as you say, she's so funny, she's so witty, she's so sharp. I sometimes wonder, you know, if she should be writing as well, because, you know, she really is on point with, you know, absolutely everything. And when I came into one of the dinners, I was very late because it took seven people to get me ready and five people to sort of derobe me, if that makes sense. And I arrived a little bit late for this dinner with all of our crew, and as in Callister crew. And then Charlie, Annabelle and Jodie Foster was in town because she was finishing the edit for Archangel, because that filmed first. And I came in and Jodie looked at my hands that were still slightly green because we hadn't managed to sort of scrub it all off in time, because needless to say, there wasn't time for this wonderful steam room that evening. And Jodie sort of looked at my hands in shock and was like, and I sort of suddenly froze, mainly because it's Jodie Foster in front of me and I didn't really know what to say, apart from my mouth moved and nothing came out. And then Annabelle just sort of suddenly came out of nowhere, all sort of, you know, she just looks wonderful all the time, even though she hates me saying that. And she just suddenly sort of like came in between us and she went, oh, Jodie, don't worry about her hands. She plays, and I wasn't allowed to tell anyone anything about me being blue or anything about the episode. So I didn't even know if I could tell Jodie why I was blue or my hands were green. So fortunately, Annabelle saved my bacon and sort of came in and made me look slightly less gormless than I was looking already. And just sort of explained that I'm actually playing a blue alien and, you know, all the sort of spray paint hasn't quite come off yet, so not to be alarmed. And then I just sort of turned to Jodie and went, yeah, no, I'm not really dirty, so don't worry about that. And then she sort of looked at me funny and then walked off. So, you know, Annabelle is there at the best of times to help us when we're in our moment of need too.
I love that you mention the Hang the DJ app, which it takes a viewing or two and a look at Reddit to notice that. Are you sort of a Black Mirror fan? Are you interested in the Easter eggs and the connections like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get sort of lost sometimes in all the sort of linking up of things. It's only when something's sort of like glaringly obvious to me that I then go, oh, that was in that episode. And actually, I'd already seen Callister like a week or so before it came out on Netflix, and I did not spot it. And I don't even think our director spotted it. You know, I can't speak for Toby, but I don't think he did. So there were just sort of interesting things that you discover, but it was only through reading about them that I actually found out. So I think that's for the sort of super fans that really kind of know what exactly to look out for. And that perhaps, maybe I could blame my eyesight, but I don't think that's sort of fair. I think I'm just not quite as on it as some other people.
I think it takes a good people of Reddit to point the stuff out. I wouldn't be able to do that episode without them. In terms of there's kind of like three great female characters in USS Callister, and there are great strong female leads across the season, but you've got like three in the episode. What do you think of that, especially in a time of hashtags like Me Too and Time's Up? That's kind of a step forward, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at pretty much every episode of season four, there's a strong female lead in every single one. And it's quite, I've always said, you know, even before I started with Black Mirror, that Charlie writes incredibly well for women. And that's probably also, you know, with due fact that Annabelle is often there as well, but he's just got a real sort of sympathy and a sensitivity for women and their stories. So, you know, it was just, you know, an absolute honor to be performing with Michaela Cole and Kristen Milioti anyway. But then, you know, as it started being revealed who were other lead females in other episodes, I can speak about, you know, other series, of course, of Black Mirror, but particularly for season four, just because that's what's on at the moment. You know, when I found out that Maxine Peake was in Metalhead, I sort of nearly lost it, because I've absolutely loved her career since the get-go. And I was just so, I think Metalhead was the one that I was the most excited to see because of the fact that, you know, Maxine Peake was in it. I think, yeah, it is a time where, you know, there are so many like female stories to be told from a female perspective. And I think regardless of Charlie being a man, I think he, like I said, he does really understand the sort of plight of women very, very well. That's clearly shown in San Junipero and, you know, many other stories. But I think that, you know, the list is endless. You've got Andrea Riseborough in Crocodile. What an incredible performance again, you know. So it's an honor to be a part of something that, you know, we're in a process of change. And, you know, I think Charlie Brooker and Black Mirror represents a sort of strong part of that. Kristen's character, Nanette Cole, she just has this incredible journey where, you know, she's not going to take, you know, his kind of power and abuse of power at all. So she sort of comes in and she tries to get us to, you know, change our ways. We're sort of set in this world as the initial Callister crew, where we're just used to this world of just being abused by him and just being mistreated by him. And she won't have it. You know, she comes in as this real sort of force to be reckoned with. And, you know, she tries to come up with a plan in order for us to essentially escape. And, you know, as you know, in the episode, the first plan doesn't really go to plan. And then, you know, Michaela's character, Shania, she gets turned into an arachnajax by Daly. But Nanette doesn't stop. She sort of goes, no, we can still do this. She keeps sort of plowing through. She keeps fighting. Nanette's story is a really interesting one because it gives us a chance to see that, like, things can end well. You know, I like the fact that Callister ends on a sort of high, and you wonder, you know, what will happen to the Callister crew in the cloud with infinity, you know, in front of them. So it definitely does give a positive outlook as opposed to some of the other episodes that, you know, certainly in terms of storytelling, aren't able to end on such a high.
Daly has been abusing his staff. He's been doing it in a fictional world.
We initially side with Daly, of course, as his, you know, first character. But then, you know, we start to learn about his true nature and how he, you know, he abuses his position of power, which is ultimately something that is happening quite a lot at the moment, not just in any sort of specific fields, but across the board. And this is something that's coming up in, you know, modern media. Can't speak for Charlie, but I don't think in his case he would necessarily have written the episode with, you know, X story in mind or Y story in mind, you know. So I think it's sort of up to us to decide sort of what we interpret this story to be.
What about some of the celebrity cameos? Were you around when Kirsten Dunst was there and Aaron Paul did his recording as well?
Yeah, I was around. I wasn't actually on set the day that Kirsten came on set, but we'd met because we'd all had dinners and stuff together before. But it sort of had travelled around that she'd sort of suggested or said as a funny joke or something, oh, I can just pop in the background. And so it ended up happening because who would turn her down, of course? So she ended up, yeah, just popping in for this cameo. And I didn't know that Aaron Paul was going to be doing the voiceover at the end. That was something that we were all given as a surprise when we had our cast and crew and press screening the week before Black Mirror came out on Netflix. So that was just a little extra added bonus, to be honest. In between every single take, especially Michaela, we just sort of run straight over to the heaters and just sort of start like turning around like a spit roast, basically just trying to like heat ourselves up because it was freezing. But you know, being on the set was just incredible. And then I think I sort of touched on it earlier when we came back for the sort of last scene where we've got the lens flares and all the J.J. Abrams style set, that it was just incredible. They managed to turn it around pretty much overnight. I think it was overnight. And, you know, obviously the shell of the set was the same, but every colour, every light, every kind of, you know, everything had been thought about. And I wish there was sort of like an outtakes version of our episode. Firstly, it's always fun to see the making of anything, but also just to see the detail at which the, you know, production design and the art directors had gone to make the monitors and all the buttons and everything just look so true to life. You know, I've never been on a spaceship, to be fair, but, you know, it was just so sort of complex and so well thought out, and all the buttons actually pushed and, you know, it was just really, really like wonderful. And then when the screens would suddenly pop up and all these different, you know, when Kristen has to find Scalene 4 and, you know, all these images pop up, it absolutely blew me away how they managed to do that. Even the pyrotechnics were brilliant. You know, when we're sort of hitting all the asteroids and things like that, and we're being thrown from side to side, and then there's explosions and things, you know, they had little, you know, thingies, whatever they are, planted in all of the lights and in all the little sort of cracks that you'd never see that all exploded at the same time. And it was absolutely
incredible. It just seemed such a shame that they had to take it down. I just wish it could have stayed there forever, to be honest. When the Tommy scene happened, the guy that you weren't expecting to bring any kind of sort of dark story to something suddenly did, and you're sort of going, well, what is the story? And it's so, you know, I did say this to the director the other day. I wish, but for, you know, for reasons of it being a TV episode, it's not possible. I wish there was a way in which we could have seen more of Jimmy's performance throughout that monologue. Obviously, for the purposes of telling the story, we needed to make cuts to Tommy and him being thrown out of the ship and all of that. But he just did it so, so, so well. And it almost changed my opinion of him, actually, when I saw him do that. Suddenly he took on a whole new kind of realm for me as well. So I think that piece of writing was quite genius from Charlie, again, just because it gave us all sort of validity and justification in order to really push hard for our final kind of, what's the word, sort of conclusion, for our final fight to get what we want and escape Captain Daly's world.
And actually, this tale of cruelty to a child is what makes kind of everyone go, God, there's more to Walton than we thought. Yeah. And this is really disgusting, what's going on.
Yeah. Exactly. Absolutely.
They have to get out. And it will happen again and again if they let the DNA stay there. I actually, I've one question. You were there on set, I guess, when Kristen Milioti, Jesse Plemons' character, took her face away. How did that work? That is so horrifying.
I think Kristen had been measured before, and so there was like a face mask that was put on top of her, and the cam, you know, she had to sort of find a position and freeze in it, and then the face mask was put on, and then she'd continue the scene like that. So it was very much also on Kristen to find that link between the two. And I hadn't actually, for obvious reasons, seen any of her fittings with the mask or anything like that. So when we all saw it on set, it really was like, very shocking and harrowing to see what, you know, any natural, even though we knew it was essentially makeup and props, it was still, all we wanted to do was just pull it off her face and make sure that she could breathe properly, you know. And then equally, when Michaela's turned into the Arachnojacks, a lot of it was on Michaela again. She had to suddenly drop to the ground and start sort of convulsing and make odd shapes and start screeching and screaming and slowly build herself up whilst her arms were flailing all over the place. And, you know, her body language was certainly very sort of taut and sort of just mad, basically. And what happened was that there were some guys that came in with, like, I think you may have heard this on the press screening, like some silver balls, and like just sort of did things around her, and then there was like this big white ball that came in, and, you know, from nothing they managed to create this Arachnojax around Michaela's like contorted movements. And, you know, then when you watch it on screen, all of a sudden you've got this CGI'd massive monster, and, you know, Kristen is quite clearly suffocating in her sort of no face. So it's absolutely overwhelming. There was no way I could have imagined when I was on set, having also not worked in, you know, sci-fi and, you know, prosthetics and CGI to this extent before, there was no way that I could have ever imagined that the outcome would be quite as spectacular as it was. I mean, I would absolutely love to work with everyone again, without a doubt. So, you know, we'll leave that in the hands of the powers that be. And until then, yeah, just keep watching, well, season 5 of Black Mirror, whenever that comes out, which potentially will, I would imagine, be 2019.
With Charlie Brooker having to cancel screen wipe and stuff, and just speaking to people who've worked on Black Mirror, I'm really getting a sense of how big an undertaking this is for...
You know, it's pretty much Charlie and Annabelle at the helm of it. And then, you know, they often use a couple of producers for each series or season. And that's, you know, and there's a guy who's the head of production design who's been on it since the beginning. But apart from them, everyone else is, like, new for each project. Or, you know, coming back from a previous project or something else, you know. So it's absolutely huge. Hundreds and hundreds of people are involved in the making of 6 standalone films each year. You know, they are, because they're standalones and because each story is its own kind of harrowing tale, it's quite hard to binge watch. So I do tend to find that at least people tend to take 6 days, as in one per day, rather than 2, but, you know, that some people do also choose to binge watch it. But what I like about it is that it sort of I feel like at the end of each episode, you need to sort of go away, have a think, have a breather, you know, maybe have like an alcoholic drink just to sort of like calm your nerves, and then, you know, prepare yourself for the next one, potentially the next day. So that's what I like. I like that it kind of sticks to, that there's sort of something a little bit different about it. We can't sort of rinse it in one day. I mean, if anyone out there has, then good for you. You should probably get a medal, because that's pretty gruesome.
I could watch two a day, but I wouldn't have said I'd taken it in, and I think my co-host for season four, Ryan, would say the same. So there's the watching to say you've watched it, and there's the watching to actually take it in, and that probably involves a second watching, and it's worth the fully taking it in.
So I definitely did that with San Junipero. Like, I think the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, I get it. But then you kind of, you know, because of all the intricacies that are written in, and also because of, you know, the really clever, you know, as I keep coming back to, production design of the whole thing, you kind of, it is worthwhile going back a second time in order to kind of really sort of go through it with a little bit more of a fine tooth comb and sort of appreciate the artistry behind it.
Thanks so much to Milanka for Skyping in all the way from LA. If you'd like to tweet us, please do get in touch at Black Mirror. So that's C with three R's. Or you can get me directly on at Suchandrika C. And please do let us know what you thought of this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate, review, subscribe, click all the stars, tell all your friends about it, but don't put them in a fake spaceship and be cruel to them. So that's all from me this week. Speak to you soon. Goodbye.